Good morning, Marianne Lutton, Independent Newspapers. Can we perhaps get a little bit more information on those oversight visits, or the visits, the 37 and the visits of, was it October, September last year? And can we also have a little bit of clarification, how exactly will you implement the Act? The Public Service Commission now over years and years and years and years says that even the highest public servants do not declare the financial interest. State of the Public Service report, the most recent one, identified a number of people right up to DG level who failed to declare their interests. Last year they discovered, for example, that whatever civil servants had declared was inaccurate, and they discovered several hundred senior civil servants actually running businesses that they didn't declare. So perhaps can you talk to the structures that you will have to put in place, or that you might want to put in place, to ensure that this Act is actually being implemented? Thank you.
Linda Hartley from Business Day. Just a follow-up to that, how many senior officials are suspended at the moment, and what is it costing the country in terms of wages for no work done?
That's a question from City Press to Minister Chabani. Two things. Number one is follow-up. It's a follow-up to Wendy's question. The statement talks here about the establishment of a central system to deal with the backlog of cases of precautionary suspension in the public service. I mean, how do you plan to enforce this, given that we have written, you know, constantly about how senior officials, actually government officials, are spending more than a year at home on paid suspension? Have you worked to reduce this? How have you worked to reduce this? What? How will this work, basically? And then secondly, the NDP recommended that cabinet appoint, actually not government, appoint a super DG who will oversee all the DGs in the public service. Where is that process? Thank you.
Last one. Okay.
Hi, morning. It's Sabonga Mkwanazi from Independent Newspapers. Just as a matter of clarification, maybe Minister Chabane, if you can clarify whether the Act will apply retrospectively or not, or the matters we'll deal with will basically relate to matters as and when the President, after he signed the Act into law in December.
Thanks, Minister.
Sorry, if retrospectively from when, from the date in which those matters relating to public servants doing business with the state will be affected, from what date? Thanks.
Thank you very much. With regard to the oversight, as you know, that DPME in the main does conduct oversight visits to various centers where services are being delivered. The main purpose of it being to identify the gaps which are there, to listen to the citizens' complaints, and to work out mechanisms as to how those things should be resolved. So DPME continues to carry out that work, and every department also try to do their bit on their own, which complements what the DPME is doing. So oversight visits are basically meant to identify the gaps and to assist departments to try and improve, and what, because they do work out any service delivery improvement plan after those visits have been concluded, and the reports are then forwarded to the various departments, and it has paid fruit in a lot of areas where they have been able to get to those visits. With regard to the declarations, we did announce earlier, some time ago, that we're changing from the manual system to e-disclosure system. We've run the pilot project in a number of departments. We're confident that the technical glitches which were there are going to be sorted out. That will assist us to get the system to be able to identify, without having to wait for a very long time, to be able to identify people who have not declared, so that actions can be taken to try and remedy that situation. Hopefully, we think that system is going to improve and is going to give us more information and enable us to deal with the matter before it gets out of hand. So we won't only wait for the Public Service Commission to look for the information. The information will be available. As you know, that information is actually lodged with the Public Service Commission. We're working closely with the Public Service Commission to ensure that the aid disclosure system is functional, which is then counter-checked with other agencies to ensure that there's nothing which falls through the cracks. And we think we should be able to improve on that system. One, on the disclosures, and secondly, on the fact that people are not able to leave out some of the issues which could be relevant. The other one relates to the Super DG. We made an announcement earlier that after we have been looking at the issues which has been raised by the National Development Plan with regard to how do we strengthen the senior management in the public service, the Department of Public Service and Administration, the Department of Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation, and the President's Office are working on looking at the various models which could be applied to deal with that matter. And as we hope that information will be brought to us once that has been concluded and has been approved by Cabinet, we'll be able to come back to you to explain what system is going to be adopted and how that's going to be done. But work is going on in that regard by the three institutions. With regard to the issue of the applicability of the law, as you would know, that it's very rare that the law applies retrospectively. Unless it is specifically stated in that law, the law can't apply retrospectively. And therefore, the law would apply as soon as it is. Normally, the President will indicate at the time of assent to the Act that this law will be applicable from this day, or this section will be implemented from this day forward. And normally, as I said, it's not legally advisable to make laws to apply retrospectively. It can complicate your life sometimes. So they will apply. It will apply as as it goes forward. With regard to the suspensions of officials, we have announced earlier that we are trying to work on the system. In the past, we never had a central system where we would know if somebody is suspended or somebody is going through a disciplinary hearing in the various departments. What we're working on now in the DPSA is to try to see if we can have a central system where all the cases which are being reported or people that are being suspended are lodged with us, so that we're able to track what is happening at the various levels of government. And that will help us to know at a glance how many people are on suspension, for how long, and what is the cost to the state, and what is it that is being done. The panel which we are putting in place, as you know, in terms of the law, the disciplinary cases are managed by the supervisors or the managers in the various line functions. It's not a matter for the DPSA. But what we do now, what we suggested we should do, and which has been accepted by Cabinet, is that we should identify a pool of labor and legal experts, and we have a roster of them, so that any department which need assistance with regard to people who can do investigations or people who can chair panels for disciplinary hearings, they should have them there. And then we'll persuade departments to be able to utilize that pool so that we're able to fast-track the cases themselves. It took us some time because we had to speak to departments, we had to identify people from the various departments, not only from ourselves, from justice, from all departments, people who could be utilized to be able to fast-track that process. And we think by the end of March, we'll be having the system in place which will help us to go through that.
Minister, ideally, how long should it take from the point of suspension up to a case is finalized? Ideally.
There is a law, or the regulations provide the time frames which need to be taken. And I think it should not be more than 6 months after a person has been suspended. Otherwise, action has to be taken one way or the other. So we will be able to meet those time frames, I think. Especially in cases which are not complicated. Sometimes cases are complicated because, as you know, our disciplinary processes are too long, postponements, people not available, it drags on, but we want to try and find a mechanism how we can fast-track this process so that we're able to alleviate the logjam in the system. The other issue which has been raised is with regard to the number of people in the coast. You would recall last year we did indicate the number. I can't at that time, I can't recall it of the cap now, as to how many people that is suspended. I think if you look at the previous statements which we issued last year, you should be able to get that information. That relates to up to that time. But we don't know if there's been any improvement in that. We'll be only able to have that type of information on the spot every time once we have finalized our issue of formulating a database which will assist us to track down the problems which are there in the public administration. Thank you.
Just two trivial comments. One is that, you know, sometimes the ideal with regards to the duration of time for people to be suspended and the practical reality don't always go hand in hand. Sometimes there are appeals and appeals and appeals which then prolong the cases. But I think, as Minister Chabane indicates, we're not only looking at what we do when a person has committed what is alleged to be a transgression and therefore they are suspended, but we are looking at the proactive measures to deal with issues of integrity of ethics in the public service so that we can preclude instances where people then have to be suspended. But we're trying to do all that we can to ensure that with regard to declarations, with regard to ethical conduct in the public service, we train and develop and empower our officials more to reduce the transgressions that eventually take place. But then you see in some instances with cases where people have appealed and you have to sit and wait until the appeal is concluded before you can take action. I think many departments would indicate that they have gone through or are going through similar experiences in one way or the other. The second thing is to just indicate with regard to the site visit, you know, that as well as the DPME and DPSA, departments are undertaking their own visits to different sites, their service points, and the presidency monitors that on a regular basis. We have to submit to the presidency reports of our interactions with the public as well as our visits to our service points, so that they are compiled, and the presidency would comment to the extent that they feel that a particular department is not undertaking those site visits as regularly as they do. And in some instances, the president and deputy president themselves have made visits to various delivery points, and that also helped to heighten alertness as to the fact that at any given point in time, our service points might be visited, if not by the ministers or the monitoring departments, then by the president and deputy president themselves. Thank you.
Thanks, Minister. Pretoria?
Hi, Fadima. There is one question from Pretoria.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Johnny Sai Maromo. I'm with the SA Press Association, SAPA. I just wanted to know, Minister of Home Affairs, Minister Gigaba, the issue of the smart ID cards. Yeah, it's given us 38 million citizens who are supposed to receive the smart ID cards. Do you have like a time frame, like by which you hope for that by that time, the people would have received the ID cards? Then my second question is on the presidential hotline. I wanted to know, these people who surveyed, there were 23,000 citizens who were surveyed, how much of exposure does it have across the rural areas and across the country? Do people know, really know about this presidential hotline? Do you have information on that, please? Thank you.
Okay. Any other? Pretoria? Cape Town?
There is nothing for now, thank you.
Okay. Cape Town?
My name is Arshima Makirana from GD Press. Minister of Home Affairs, mine is linked to the ID smart card. The president announced on Thursday night that they would be able to apply for a smart card from the banks. Can you give us more details which banks, who, at whose cost, do you just apply at the banks or and go to Home Affairs to get your card, or is the whole process going to be done by the banks? And do you have a budget for that, please?
Okay.
For the exit from the budget, Minister Chabalia was wondering if you could tell us, give us an update on the review of the ministerial handbook, please. Where is that process at the moment and when will it be finalized?
Okay.
Sorry, it's Windermark here again from Business Day. Given the delays that are happening in the disciplinary process through, you said, Minister Gigaba, appeal after appeal after appeal, it seems very clear that that malcontent officials in the public service are hiding behind both the Public Service Act and our labour law. Is there a case to be made for changing either of those two laws?
Thanks, Minister.
I just thought there was a hand, but just to respond to the questions about the smart ID card, we hope that by 2018 we would have achieved the objective of converting all green ID barcoded documents into smart ID cards. Now, that obviously depends on the number of things that we need to do. One of those, and I will talk about it a bit later, is the expansion of our footprint beyond the offices of the department, the 403 offices of the Department of Home Affairs. The second one is the availability of uninterrupted network in the Department of Home Affairs, because the application for the smart ID card takes place using the live capture system, which depends heavily on back-end network, which is supplied by some of our service providers. As you might have heard, I certainly have heard from a lot of people on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, that there have been very serious problems in some of our offices with regard to the availability of reliable network supply, which has resulted in downtime challenges, which meant that in many of our offices, you have the live capture down, and so when people come to apply for these documents, they are then unable to do that. We are working around the clock to address that, because what we have placed before our service providers is the absolute need for uninterrupted network supply for us to deliver this service as well as we should. Because when a client comes to a Home Affairs office to apply for their ID card and they find that the systems are down, they don't know that there is a supplier of the network who is responsible for the systems being down. They take issue with the department itself. And we can't stand there, hang our hands in the air and blame our network suppliers. We need to ensure that the network suppliers provide us uninterrupted, reliable supply network so that we can be able to provide the service that we have to provide. At the present moment, there are 140 offices that have been converted into dedicated smart ID card offices, with the plan to expand that footprint to 38 more offices in the next financial year. That means that in many instances, people therefore clock up very few offices for the application of smart ID cards, which increases the volume of service in those offices. We are, however, managing to cope with all of those. because if the network supply was reliable and predictable, we are able to cope with the volume of work in those offices and to be able to provide people with their smart ID cards timely within 3 to 4 days or 7 at most. But the critical thing for us is to ensure that our network suppliers provide us a reliable and predictable supply of the network so that we can work as well as we want to. Now, as I said earlier, critical also to meeting this time frame of 2018 is the creative ways to expand our footprint beyond the 403 offices of the Department of Home Affairs. And that is why we started negotiations with the banks. There are several new innovations that are going to be introduced by the department in the course of this and the next financial year to be able to assist South Africans to apply for their smart ID cards and passports in an extremely convenient way. That is why the president then announced that we will soon be able to apply for our ID card at our bank, which means if I bank with Bank X, Bank X would be able to take my application and we are linking our systems with those banks for us to be able to undertake that process. At the present moment, there are 3 banks which have come on board, and we have signed a memoranda of understanding to start the pilot process with them, so that a person could be able to go to their bank after doing their banking, go to a home affairs kiosk within the bank, submit all their applications, they take their biometric photograph, their automated fingerprint, and their electronic signature. And that is then compiled into an electronic package and deposited at Home Affairs. And they will be able to do their payments at the bank for that smart card. And therefore, it will then be deposited to Government Printing Works for the printing of that smart ID card. And the person will be able to collect their card back at the bank where they applied, because the logic of the smart ID card is that you receive your card at the office where you make the application. I think maybe with the further progression of technology and capability within the government printing works, we would be able to exercise more options. That's very much possible. I think at the present moment, it's just a question of trying to get one system working perfectly before we can begin exploring other systems later on. So in April, we are going to start the pilot process with the relevant banks. Those banks would be the First National Bank, Standard Bank, as well as the Nedbank. We are hoping that with the passage of time, we would be able to enlist the services of the South African Post Office as well, which has the largest footprint in the country and has a farthest reach, especially into rural areas. It would assist us a great deal, so that where you do not have the delivery points of Home Affairs, but we can utilize the infrastructure of the South African Post Office to be able to reach out to those areas. But obviously, there is a number of issues that we need to address at that level. So we are looking at a number of mechanisms, and I think around April, we will make further and very concrete announcements around how the pilot is going to take place, how long it's going to last. But we are quite excited about the fact that the banks have accepted our request to partner with them. And we think that, in a way, it will both lessen the pressure at our offices, but increase our ability to utilize the infrastructure of the private sector as partners in delivering government services, particularly e-services. But with this partnership, there's a number of other opportunities that we can see and that we are working on at a technological level that we are going to announce during the course of the year that would enable South Africans to receive convenient service when they apply for their documents. And at that point, therefore, once the pilot is successful, we can then open up the application for the Smart ID card to all South Africans who might wish to apply for their Smart ID cards, because even as in the past we have said we are limiting this only to 60-year-olds and to 16-year-olds, but we have seen a number of South Africans coming up, making their applications, regardless of whether they are not 16 and not yet 60. But they have been taking up the opportunity and they've received their documents. Thank you very much.
Yes, probably just to make an addition of the response by Minister Giga. You would recall there are two issues which the President announced in the State of the Nation address. The one was the identified districts where broadband is going to be rolled quite as pilots in almost all the provinces. The second one was the identification of Telkom as a lead agent in the rollout of broadband. That will assist a lot in making sure that services are available to communities in the far-flung areas once we have the necessary connectivity countrywide. And it's at that point that we should be able to get all South Africans to have access to online applications and to strengthen our e-government endeavor to try and provide services through modern technology. With regard to the hotline, you would know that the hotline has been running for quite some time now, I think since 2009 or 2010. There is quite a number of information which have been gathered through that process and improvements have been made. Many South Africans do know the hotline. They do call from the various parts of the country. If you look at the statistics and where the call originates, in most cases they're not only originating in urban areas, they're also coming from rural areas and throughout the country. In any other municipality which you could find. So there is quite a good reach with regard to the issue of the hotline. With regard to the issue of the ministerial handbook, you would know that this process has been on for a very long time. We are speeding up the process now, and I think we are left with two or three steps towards the conclusion of the matter so that we are able to table it to Cabinet. You would know that it involves quite a number of stakeholders. The police look at the security aspects, transport look at the transport aspects, and then public works look at the issues related to accommodation, and then also the Commission on the Remuneration of Public Office Bearers will have to make an input. But we are now consolidating the report, and it will be tabled in Cabinet. And then hopefully we should be able to conclude it before the end of March, and we should be able to make an announcement in that regard. Though the program director has said no question outside the statement, but it's okay. There's no load shedding here or scrambling. The other one which I didn't get was the last one, which was talking about the labor laws. I missed that part.
No, there are no plans yet or afoot to change the labor laws or the Public Service Act in order to deal with the problem of the transgressions by the public servants, which may result in suspensions and, as we were saying, prolonging of disciplinary cases by people who are appealing. We take it that, you know, as a rules-based system, people have a right to appeal, right up to their point of satisfaction. But there are mechanisms within the public service which ensures that we can resolve the cases. I think what we are trying to do at the present moment is to find a way by engaging by engaging this pool of labor experts to expedite the resolution of the disciplinary cases so that even if people appeal, that doesn't become a source of prolonging the suspension. But what we need to do is, one, deal with the front end, which is improving the integrity and ethics of our public servants, but secondly, dealing with the process once a transgression has taken place by expediting the disciplinary case, so that when even when people do appeal, nonetheless, it is not used as a mechanism to just keep themselves on paid suspension for long.
Thank you.
Just to add on that, maybe to put a bit of context. South Africa is a constitutional democracy, which is supposed to be based on the rule of law. The processes which have set in place and the laws which have passed and the regulations, some of them which is, comes from a very long process of negotiations with the stakeholders to the final conclusion. It is important that we understand and respect those laws and regulations. Some of them may seem to be an irritation or might not like them because the processes are so complicated. But that is what South Africa is all about, and I think we need to respect that. So some of the delays which are there is because the manner in which our procedures and the laws are crafted allows for that type of thing to happen. And I think we need to be patient and understand that as long as everything which is done is lawful, I think we need to understand within that context. So there's no need for us to amend any legislation, any law, because to amend it, you are going back to a long, drawn negotiations, which you might not be able to conclude. The system is perfect. The system is democratic. The system affords everybody the opportunity to do it. The problem which we face is management, is that we are not managing. Managers are not managing. Once we can get managers who are managing their areas of work, we should be able to fast-track some of the things. It's just a management issue rather than a legal issue.
Pretoria, last questions?
No, we don't have questions. Thank you, Khadima.
Last two or three here.
Thanks, morning. Gay Davis, Eyewitness News. Just two quick ones. Minister, forgive me if you addressed this earlier, but just in terms of a review of immigration procedures, given the comments by Tourism Minister Harnikom that there has been an impact on inbound tourism numbers from particularly China and the US. Are you going to review the regulations, and if so, how long will that take, and what are you looking at? The other thing is, with reference to Minister Chobani's most recent comment regarding the problem in terms of managing the disciplinary processes lying with the management capacity and not with the laws and the procedures. When Minister Sisulu was the minister, she spoke at length about the need for leadership development in the public administration. And there was talk about turning Palama into something different. What is happening with Palama? Is Palama still expected to develop civil servants in the way that she was articulating? Where are we at in terms of developing management leadership for our civil service? Thank you.
Yeah, Mr. Bok, do you have also two quick ones? Why has ABSA not signed on as a service provider? And then number two, can you talk on the immigration offer visa regulations for SA business travelers to the UK?
Thank you, Minister. Those were the last questions.
Thank you. Actually, there are no relaxation of visas for South Africans traveling to the UK. What the UK announced last year is that they are relaxing the requirement for a transit visa for those traveling to the US or Australia. And we said, sorry, but we are not excited. Because what we want is a complete visa exemption for all South Africans traveling to the UK. And that is why, in response, we then, amongst others, decided that we are going to impose a visa requirement for the holders of official and diplomatic passports, UK official and diplomatic passports. We left the ordinary passport holders, UK ordinary passport holders, with the exemption which they had. So it wasn't really something we needed to be excited about, because it doesn't address the issue that we have been raising with the British government. The Absa Bank would still come to the party, I hope. I think what I mentioned are the banks that have by now signed MOUs and with us. The Director General has thus far signed MOUs with FNB and Standard Bank. Nedbank has indicated their willingness, and I haven't checked, but I think it was the DG was abroad in Cote d'Ivoire at the civil registration conference. So once probably he would sign that MOU with Nedbank soon, we still await Absa Bank to indicate whether they are coming to the party or not. We hope they would. And as we were saying, that we are discussing with the South African Post Office the possibility of also utilizing their infrastructure and footprint for the same purposes. The immigration regulations, we have indicated that they are not cast in stone, that in the instance that there is something, there is some new fact, very compelling, that come up, we will review them. But there's one thing we will not do. We will not relax the requirement for any person coming to South Africa to apply in person. They have to. We do the same when we travel to their countries. Secondly, we have said that we have clarified a number of things, particularly which affect tourists. For example, the requirement that if they are coming to the country, they should be in possession of an unabridged death certificate for their children. We have indicated that it is a death certificate that's offered in their country, not as we offer it in South Africa. So if, for example, the Indian nationals are traveling to South Africa with their children, the child passport of India contains the details of the parents of the child, and we have said we would accept that. Other countries offer other forms of documents. We have indicated that we would accept that. And so one of the challenges with regards to China has been the fact that because the VFS enables us to reach out to many points beyond the cities or provinces where you have South African consulates. And that therefore means we have the capability to reach out to far-flung areas in any country. Now, we are able, therefore, to service even those people without having to review the immigration regulations. I think the challenge has been, in some of the countries, you cannot offer consulate services where there are no diplomatic offices of the country. But where countries would agree, we would be able to offer those services utilizing visa facilitation centers. We would establish visa facilitation centers at those areas, in those cities, and offer the consulate services, the consular services of Home Affairs, as we require. And so I think that our what we need is regular discussions, more robust discussions with the relevant countries, particularly India and China, which are sending us more tourists, for us to be able to provide them with the consular services that they require without us having to relax the requirement that we offer. I mean, that a person coming to the country must apply in person. In reality, we understand the views of the different parties, but as Home Affairs, we have to do a balancing act between economic development and security. I think we've made this point several times that we wouldn't want any surprise that there have been instances where our immigration regulations have been breached, transgressed, and compromised. And we need to balance between economic development and national security in how we deal with them. In that regard, we have to take into consideration the fact that tourists will stop coming to South Africa if a security mishap happened. And we must not be caught sleeping. We need to ensure that we balance in a manner that guarantees tourists that coming to South Africa is a safe endeavor and they should continue coming. But that notwithstanding, we established a joint task team with the industry last year. The aviation, the airlines, the tourism and hospitality industry to look at a number of things that they would want assistance on and that we would want to exchange ideas and communication on. And one of the things we indicated to them is that we welcome from them any new ideas about what we could do. And there will be. There are going to be additional proposals we are going to make, announcements that we will make, that will make it extremely convenient for tourists in particular to come to South Africa. And so we are continuously working on improving our systems and ensuring that we can provide a service that addresses the concerns of the industry. But we cannot elevate the concerns of the industry above the concerns of the security sector. I think that the recent experiences in Kenya, in Nigeria, just our neighbors, do indicate that South Africa must be on the alert, and we cannot be naive to the fact that some of the unwanted elements on the continent, the white widow, the Rwandan guy who was strangled in Sentin, all those instances happened because our immigration regulations were a bit lax. And so we need to try and firm up, because it might not make sense if somebody travels via your country to commit a crime of mass murder elsewhere. It might not make sense when somebody travels to your country to commit a crime of murder against a national of their country. But what if we commit a crime of mass murder? What would we say? We would blame the immigration regulations, we would blame the Department of Home Affairs. And so we need to be on the alert. Not everybody who travels globally travels for the good intention of just traveling. There are many people who travel with very bad intent. And so we need to balance that. We know it causes inconvenience for the ordinary traveler. But it causes inconvenience for me traveling to the U.S. to have to take off my jacket, my belt, to have to take off my shoes, my socks, and hold on to my pants so that they don't fall in order to get into that country, because some other thug somewhere decided that they must put an end to my free movement. And so South Africa must not be caught napping in this regard. And for us, we need to do that balancing act in a manner that ensures that we don't compromise security, but at the same time, we continue to be welcoming to immigrants. But as I say, immigration regulations are not cast in stone. We will continuously review them. And if new facts, new realities arise, if new conditions emerge, we will amend them. And if better systems emerge on our part, we will introduce those systems to make it even more convenient for tourists to come to the country. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Minister. The issue of the training of public servants. We said we are transforming Palama into the National School of Government. We are in that process. It was launched in October that other year. And now we are busy putting in systems. We are reviewing the curriculum, we are reviewing all the courses which are supposed to be made. So that is one course. We think we should be able to add value to the training requirements for people who are employed in public service. But that does not remove the fact that managers, with or without that training, they have to do their work as they're employed to do it. So that is a point which we're making, that managers will have to manage Because once you're employed as a manager, you're expected to manage without the additional training which PALAM, which is the National School of Governance, may give, especially when it relates to the management of the day-to-day running of the department or the units or the centers which they're actually managing. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Minister Gigaba, Minister Chabane. Ladies and gentlemen, we've come to the end of our briefing. Thanks.